Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, a podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. 50 episodes and counting. This podcast was first launched in February 2021, born out of a desire to deepen the conversation about 21st century skills in the English-speaking classroom. It was in the middle of the pandemic when we were experiencing the need firsthand for resilience, flexibility and self-directed learning, among other things. By late November 2024, generative AI had become widely accessible to the public, a development that underscored the importance of agency, critical thinking, AI literacy, as well as core soft skills such as communication. And at the same time, we're now facing the biggest threats of our time, as Andrea Schleicher, OECD Director of Education and Skills, has called them. Ignorance, the closed mind, hate, the closed heart, and fear, the enemy of agency. So, future skills are more vital than ever, yet change is slow in coming. Curricula still tend to prioritise facts and information, even though we live in a world in which we have instant access to knowledge. What matters more is being able to find reliable information efficiently, evaluate the accuracy of what we encounter online or on social media, as well as being able to understand the motives of those who create it. As Yuval Noah Harari points out in 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, the last thing a teacher needs to give her pupils is more information. They already have far too much of it. Instead, people need the ability to make sense of information, to tell the difference between what's important and what's unimportant, and above all, to combine many bits of information into a broad picture of the world. Skills such as empathy, developing one's own voice, finding something meaningful to share are more important than ever in a world in which many people seem to think it's about who can shout the loudest and with the most conviction. In this episode, I want to revisit some of the insights I've gained over the past 5 years, particularly regarding our interactions with generative AI, because the time has come to embrace change rather than waiting for it to happen. I'd like to begin with agency and the need for purpose. Agency allows us to make our own choices rather than passively following those made by others. And it's something we can exercise in different areas of our lives, in the form of moral agency, distinguishing right from wrong, acting on what's right, even if our self-interest lies elsewhere. Creative agency, the power to make things and add value by doing so. This involves imagination and innovation. And social agency, understanding the rights and responsibilities we have in connection with the society in which we live, and learning to acknowledge the rights of others. We also exercise it in different modes. Personal agency is exercised by the individual and is about bringing influence to bear on what's within our individual control. Co-agency refers to mutually supportive relationships that a person has with those around them and working with these people to enable us to reach our desired goals. And collective agency, in which we pool our knowledge, skills and resources with others to effect change beyond what we can do alone. And of course, there's also student or learner agency, which Charles Leadbeater describes in the 2022 publication Learning on Purpose as pursuing learning for a purpose. It's about understanding the connection between the why and how of learning. The thing is, when students don't see the purpose of a task, they focus on completing it. And now that they can turn to AI, many students don't see this as cheating, but rather as an effective shortcut. The reason being, AI delivers what the system seems to reward, an end product, not the sometimes messy and complex process of arriving there. At the same time, students are understandably questioning the point of a task if AI can complete it within seconds. But if they simply copy and paste AI-generated answers, passing them off as their own, students are outsourcing the productive struggle. Although this might lead to better results in the short term, it can lead to reduced attention, less persistence in the face of setbacks, less resilience when faced with failure, and diminished cognitive stamina. So, times have changed. And we have to too. On the one hand, we need to rethink the way we design tasks and assessments to ensure that students can't just outsource their thinking. Creative and collaborative tasks such as podcasting, creating videos, talks with limited text or visuals, but not bullet points, are just some of the ways that we can do so. On the other, we also have to support student accountability and agency. So first of all, explain to students that AI delivers options, not answers. Options that need to be evaluated, checked for bias, rephrased using students' own words, and so on. Instead of forbidding its use, students need to learn how to turn to it with intent, when to do so, and how to prompt effectively. If students learn to keep an AI log in which they briefly reflect on how they use it, which prompts are most effective, which facts they've checked, revisions they've undertaken, this will help them to use it with more intent and build agency. But it's not just about building student agency with AI, it's about doing so in broader contexts too. Leadbeater has pointed out that students often don't have many opportunities to show initiative in schools, and so they become passive, physically present, but psychologically absent and uncommitted. So what if we created more genuine opportunities for students to demonstrate agency within schools? From encouraging students to set their own learning goals, allowing a couple of minutes at the end of a lesson for students to reflect on what they've learned and what they'd like to try next time, to deciding what homework they think would make most sense, and so on. Why fact-checking and critical ignoring are now key. Today, information and news flood our feeds. The problem is that we don't take the time to stop and verify what we're looking at before we engage with a viral photo, video, or news story. We sometimes just forward it in a moment of outrage or start wondering whether it's true or not based on whether we think it might be plausible or whether it feels right. Yet, as Mike Caulfield and Sam Weinberg say in their book Verified, we're set up to fail when we apply analog concepts to a digital medium. They've spent years field testing a model to help people make better choices online based on techniques fact-checkers use and critical thinking skills tailored to a digital environment. The model is based around four things that we should do when looking at a piece of content that we come across online, and it's based around the acronym SIFT. The first action is stop. We should ask ourselves what we really know about the claim and the source that's sharing it. Instead of focusing on whether it might be true or not, we should ask ourselves, do I really know what I'm looking at? Am I sure? If it upsets or surprises me, why? The second is investigate the source. Quickly check whether the source is trustworthy for this purpose. As the authors point out, if the source is good, we can often stop after this step. Then comes find other coverage. See what other sources say. If other reliable sources are not reporting the claim or story, we need to proceed with caution. And finally, trace the claim, quote or story back to the original content. Even if the first source isn't great, it might provide a link to where the information or story came from. By returning to this source, we can see whether it's reputable and whether it also supports the assertion. When investigating the source, we should apply the lateral reading technique. So instead of going to a website and wondering whether it's reliable or not by reading the About page or by considering the general look and feel, we should open other tabs and visit other websites we trust to see what they say about the source. One of the problems we're facing today is the sheer mass of information and news we're confronted with on a daily basis. Back in 1971, economist and psychologist Herbert A. Simon had already noted that a wealth of information creates a poverty of attention. Yet he wasn't calling for us to pay more attention, but rather to decide where we direct our attention. The point is, attention is finite. If we turn it towards one thing, we can't direct it elsewhere at the same time. And in today's world, where everyone is vying for our attention, we need to make conscious decisions as to where we're going to direct it so that we don't end up frittering it away. Caulfield and Weinberg say we need to practice critical ignoring when we come across questionable information. Instead of allowing it to distract or even steal our attention, we should spend the time on places where it's worth our while. As they say, by adding critical ignoring to your intellectual repertoire, you'll quickly be able to recognize and walk away from dubious information that leaves your mind fried and your spirit enfeebled. AI literacy is no longer optional. In an article for the World Economic Forum in May 2025, Tanya Milberg wrote, AI's most significant influence lies in how we access, process, and apply information, fundamentally redefining education and the way we acquire knowledge. When the internet became widely available, people began to ask themselves why they still needed to learn so many facts, as they could find out the answers at the press of a button. Back then, they still had to make choices to decide which search results to turn to compare sources, to decide whether a source was reliable or not. But now let's fast forward a few years. Today, AI has transformed the way we find information, making it faster and more convenient than ever before. Many people use generative AI as a search machine or rely on the generative AI overview provided at the top of the search results, but they don't question the results. Part of the problem is that AI models are trained to produce results that sound plausible and fluent and don't often admit to not knowing or being unsure. They bluff so confidently that people are less likely to challenge the answer. But we should know that AI can hallucinate, invent facts, or be biased, so the need to check them should be non-negotiable. However, as the Jim Studio 2025 revealed, over half of the young people surveyed said that the information delivered by AI can be trusted. So it's vital that we teach students how to engage with AI so that they learn to critically evaluate what it generates. They need to ask themselves questions such as, is this really the answer I need? Is the answer really correct, or does it just sound plausible? Is there bias? Where can I check the facts and find appropriate sources? But at the same time, we must stop and reflect before we even turn to it, to ask ourselves, why am I turning to it? What do I want to achieve? Which tool will work best? Is this the right time to be turning to AI, or should I first do some creative thinking on my own? What answer am I looking for? What questions could AI ask me to be able to complete the task more effectively? Admittedly, key players are still working on developing a framework for AI literacy, but instead of waiting for it to be published, we can at least raise students' awareness of some aspects and encourage them to think about some of these key questions so that they engage with AI more purposefully. Connecting with others and sharing meaningful ideas is essential. Although AI is now able to deal with increasingly complex tasks, the human aspects of work are growing increasingly important. This is because bots are not yet able to replace the intuitive nature of human connection. Surveys have found that people still prefer having difficult conversations face to face because we can gauge the other person's reactions, adjust our tone and body language, among other things. So effective communication skills still rank among the most desirable skills in the workplace. But effective communication involves so much more than speaking fluently. Active listening, really focusing on what the other person is saying and responding in a thoughtful and appropriate manner, is at its heart. It's also about sensing and reacting to the other person's body language and emotions. As Kate Murphy, author of You're Not Listening, has pointed out, despite its importance, it's something that we don't actually focus on in schools. We spend a great deal of time teaching students to debate, to argue convincingly, to speak eloquently, but not how to listen. And as I've said before, this has nothing to do with how we teach students to do listening tasks in foreign language learning. Effective communication also means we have to think about the people we're communicating with. So, for instance, before we begin giving a presentation or talk, we have to ask ourselves, who's my audience? What do they know? What do they need to know? What action do I want them to take? What's my key message? How can I best present the information? How can I create an emotional connection with my audience? How can I avoid them drifting off? AI cannot yet create a rapport with an audience, adjust tone or language after reading their faces, create an agreeable and welcoming atmosphere. This is where we as humans still excel. And of course, the language we use is very important. But contrary to what students are sometimes led to believe, effective communication isn't about using complex words and syntax to impress our audience. It's about finding clear and simple ways to get our message across, because communication is about sharing ideas. So instead of focusing on students displaying their knowledge of a topic, we should also give them opportunities to talk about things that truly matter to them. They'll be able to show their passion and practice sharing their ideas in a meaningful way without having to rely on stacks of slides full of text. And it will help them to develop their unique voice, build confidence presenting or speaking in public, as well as finding ways to connect with their audience. As Chris Anderson writes in his book, TED Talks, The Official TED Guide to Public Speaking, ants shape each other's behavior by exchanging chemicals. We do it by standing in front of each other, peering into each other's eyes, waving our hands, and emitting strange sounds from our mouths. Human-to-human communication is a true wonder of the world. The power of what if. I recently read a blog post by Seth Godin that opens saying, "We spend most of the time we're in school extinguishing imagination. "Will this be on the test?" is a much more common question than "What if?" As he then points out, imagination is a skill that we need to hone. Like other skills, it's not something that we either have or don't. But it needs practice, and this involves effort. Sitting back and giving our imagination free rein might feel unusual for some today, especially as we have an attention hoover in our pockets 24/7. But it's in quiet and unstructured moments like these when the magic happens. When we ask what if, we allow our curiosity to come into play and creativity can unfold. As Dr. Paul Hanel from Essex University has said, "True innovation still demands the human spark that asks not just what's next, but what if?" Today, technological change is happening at breakneck speed. Learning can no longer be seen as something that ends when we leave school or university. As Andrea Schleicher wrote in December 2025, lifelong learning isn't a slogan anymore. It's the survival skill of our age. To thrive, we need to remain curious, to be interested in the world around us, to keep asking what if. We must build resilience so that we're not thrown off track by setbacks or give up at the first sign of difficulty. We need to remain flexible so that we can adapt to and even embrace change rather than seeing it as a threat. Above all, we must ensure that we don't outsource our agency or our thinking. As educators, we also have a responsibility to show students what embracing change looks like rather than dismissing it or framing it as a threat. In a world that can often feel uncertain, perhaps one of the most important things we can do is to help students face their future with curiosity and courage. I look forward to continuing this journey with you and sharing insights and ideas to inspire you to further action. But before I sign off today, I'd like to take a moment to thank everyone who works behind the scenes to make this podcast possible. To Basti, my sound engineer, for making every episode sound so round and polished. To Don and Wolfgang for their careful attention as my first listeners. To Knut for the smooth running of the technical side of things and ensuring the podcast reaches every platform. To Saskia for designing such colourful thumbnails each month. To Lily and Norbert for their thoughtful comments and feedback. And to Anne, Tamara and everyone at Ernst Klett Sprachen, thank you for believing in this project and giving me the space to share my ideas and findings. And last, but by no means least, a podcast is nothing without its listeners. So to each and every one of you, thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.